Welcome to Cabronas y Chingonas, a queer and Latinx podcast. We cover topics like
Ocean's 8, the new trailer. Have you seen it?
Yes, it was magical.
I can't believe how much like chemistry Sandra Bullock has with literally every single one of those girls. But mostly
every single
Kate.
Woman in that. Well, Kate Blanchett, oh, queer icon now. Well, now.
And Sarah Paulson, I mean, honestly.
Actual queer woman. Love her. And then, like, Rihanna? Did you see Rihanna?
Yes. 8-Ball.
Yeah. She's like, what's your real name? 8-Ball. What's your fake name? 9-Ball. Love her.
I had that moment with Luis from Nos Vemos en el Swap Meet. He's like, what's your real name? Mm-hmm. What's the whole weird name? What up, cabrona?
What's poppin', chingona? What you doing, girl?
I'm sitting here with this ghetto set up in my room. Haven't been able to get rid of the static. So if you hear a static, I mean, you know, that's why. Guys, I'm sorry. I apologize.
It's because of this static. Static shock up in that bitch.
You know, I wish it was me. That would maybe mean something. But no, we've tested it out in other places. It just seems to be something in my house. So.
There's a ghost in there. Probably. A little boy.
Somebody made that joke today already, so I'm like, oh, fuck.
Wait, the fuck, what? What do you mean?
Like, they're saying that I have a ghost. Jokingly.
You probably do, dude. You probably do. It's okay. They're probably like Casper. They're probably like a friendly ghost. Like, you never know.
I guess we'll find out.
Yeah, how you been? How's LA? Now you're back in LA.
Yeah, I've only been back for a few days, but it's good. Like, pretty quickly, I got to meet up with Luis, and we went to Tijuana, went to San Diego with Café con Pam, so that was kind of nice. But other than that, I've just been killing time and applying places.
No, what'd you see in San Diego?
Not much. We hung out at Pam's place and went to go eat.
But you went to Mexico again. That's so cool.
Yeah, we went to Tijuana for just a couple of hours, but it was awesome.
And you got a haircut.
No, I got a haircut, like, before I even went to Dallas.
Like...
Yeah, forever ago, I get a haircut.
Forever ago.
It feels like forever ago. I've been to, like, you know, 2 countries, 3 states. No, I'm just kidding.
That's a long time ago, dude. What have I been up to? Living life,
You went to Mexico, too.
I did. I went to Mexico, came back, had a whole birthday. It's been a whole new year.
A whole ass birthday.
I don't know, like, a whole ass birthday.
You feeling that age? You feeling that aging?
Yeah, I feel it because I'm, like, super sick right now. Like, I don't know if, like, I came back to work, and I swear, I'm just, like, allergic to my job. Like, the day I got back to work was the day I started, like, coughing and sneezing. So, it's trash. I'm allergic to working at my job.
A good excuse to be like, sorry, I'm allergic to you, I can't come into work today, sorry. not sorry.
Oh, Demi Lovato though. Anyways, that song is so fire. It's way off topic, but
it's a very good song.
I am drinking a whole bottle of champagne right now by myself, and it's barely noon in Dallas, so
bitch, it's 10:30 here, so don't even get me started.
Yeah, it's 12:30 here, and I'm already drinking this bottle by myself, and it's worth it. I honestly feel like a better person.
So it's some good champagne, and then
it's some.
I'm not gonna
champagne.
Lie, you're gonna take one long ass nap after this.
I'm so excited too. Honestly, like, it's cold here, and I'm like sick, so maybe I can like sweat out my sickness, and I just like hang out with these poodles. Now I'll be a better person.
Yeah, when I left Dallas, it was around 20 degrees. And when I got here, it was around 70.
I'm so jealous.
Well, right now it's in the mid 60s, but still, like, the difference. Like, I can go out outside naked here.
Yeah, you don't want to do that here just because it's freezing balls. It's like 40 again, and I'm like sweating. I just can't do this. I'm just too sick. And I'm trying to think what else is going on in my life. Been listening to podcasts. Oh my god, shout out to Latinos for Lunch again.
Do you have any? Yeah, they're great. What? Have you come up with any New Year's resolutions?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to be a basic bitch, but like, I just want to be able to do like 50 burpees without dying, you know? Like, I want to do 50
That's so
burpees without
attainable. You
dying.
can do that. That's
I can do that this year, and I feel like I can get a new job, like move out, improve my life, you know? Like little things like that that are huge, actually.
Yeah, you can do that.
Well, my
Oh,
finances are
that's
fine,
attainable.
but what about you? What
I
about you?
want to get a job in the industry. I did that tweet your ambitious thing. So I want to take this podcast to another level. I want to get a job, and I want. Fuck, what was the third one? Let's see.
What was the third one?
I
You
don't
had like
know.
three total?
I had three total. That was just like something I came up with yesterday, though. Oh yeah, and then find, a group of people here in LA that can be my friends, you know? That sounds so fucking sad. I have friends here in the area, but
Your
like
people.
friends, you know what I mean? Like the literal show friends, how you have that group of people that you always go to, your go-tos. That's what I want.
Your LA family then.
Basically, yeah. So those are my three goals. They're pretty simple. I just, that's all I care about right now. The basics.
The basics. Yeah, I mean, I've been like, this is so fucked up. I used to talk so much shit about like people that were like, "Oh, I'm healing, I'm opening my heart chakra." But like honestly, like since I've been on that wave, like I've been so happy. Like I've just been so like happy and like accepting of things. Like my emotions, like it's okay to feel, you know? Like and that's really hard. Like I didn't think that was okay, and I'm starting to like accept myself and love myself, and it's fucking work, dude. But that hippy dippy shit is all for me. Like I'm all about it
That
now.
hippy dippy shit. I
It is.
don't personally know what feelings are, but I do, I do like to be okay with myself, so I get it.
Yeah. So yeah, today, what are we gonna be talking about?
Today we're let's flash back a little bit. When I was in Dallas, you and I both went to go see this movie, Call Me by Your Name.
Yes.
I
Oh my
knew
God, my
absolutely
heart.
nothing. I knew nothing about this movie, and yet I feel like you knew a good bit. And that's what you're going to cover today. It's a great movie. It's gotten a lot of critical acclaim. We'll talk about more a little bit. And then I'll pair it with Shameless. Shameless is a show I've been wanting to talk about for a long time, but haven't had an excuse. But I think it pairs really nicely with this movie.
Oh yeah, you're right. I remember that on Tumblr a couple years back. No,
Okay.
yeah, like that's how I know everything. All my information comes from Tumblr sometimes. No, yeah, so I like read the book. And it was by Andre Osiman, I believe. And I don't know, like, it's getting a lot of, like, it's getting dinged really hard because they're straight men playing queer men. And I want to
That's
know how
so
you felt about, like,
interesting.
that.
That's so interesting
Yeah.
to me because, okay, I when it comes to race, you and I talk about this a lot. Like, it should really be a Mexican playing a Mexican, et cetera, et cetera. Like, there's just a level of authenticity there. There really is. And trust me, I'm all for queer people playing queer people on the screen, mostly because I think more queer people should be cast and be able to be open. In the media, because most of the time there is queer people playing queer people, they're not out, or they're playing.
Yeah, we don't
The
know
thing is,
that.
right, but mostly for a decade or more, or forever, really, forever, since the beginning of film, there's been queer people playing straight people. It's about acting, you know what I mean? So when it comes to me
Yeah.
personally, I'm like, if you better be able to portray that role so well, which I think they did in Call Me by Your Name. You better be able to do that shit like damn well. Then, there shouldn't be an issue at that point. But if you have an awkward actor
Yeah.
like the dude from Sense8 that quit because he was basically homophobic and he didn't
Wait,
want to do gay
what?
stuff. Yeah, there was a dude,
Like,
one of
there's
the.
like orgies in Sense8, isn't there?
Yeah, exactly. So I guess one of the dudes, what they have said is that he quit because he didn't want to do that stuff anymore. It's like, fuck you, we don't want you in there anyway. So for me, it's all about like having open-minded and very good actors in the right role, for the right reason. That's, I don't know.
I mean, that's true. No, like, the thing is with me, it's like I feel conflicted because, like, we talk about representation, how much we want, Latinos who play Latinos. Characters.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I want queer characters.
Period. I mean, you can act like in a queer role. I won't say you can act gay, but you can act in a queer role. A white person can't pretend to be black, you know?
Oh, fuck no.
So I think there's a bit of a difference there. Like I said, I support both. I think there should be more queer actors, period, who should be open about
queer roles. That,
yeah, and shouldn't be boxed into a certain role because they're queer, you know what I mean? Like, if Sarah Paulson was made to be only queer and everything, she wouldn't have half her roles, you know what I mean?
Yeah, the majority of her roles wouldn't go to her. No, I understand. Yeah. I mean, it's gotten that criticism. They're saying, oh, how dare straight white guys play gay guys? And I was like, well, you know, being queer isn't, like, the only cultural significance to you, you know? It is a culture and it isn't at the same time, like, because we're both queer, but
right.
If you're part of the culture, if you're, like, in that world, and I don't think that all queer people are necessarily in that world, like, me and you, I say we're part of it, but we're not, I don't know, we're not boxed in by it, if that makes any sense?
It's not our entire identity, you know what I mean?
Like, no, it's not. It's one of many things.
And if it is a culture, it's because we need a safe place, you know what I mean? Like, it's, in a perfect world, like, there wouldn't be a necessity for that. You don't need pride when you aren't oppressed, you know what I mean? Like, you just are.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know. I think they did a great job. I don't care.
And if you're respectful and you do it right and you don't purposely say, oh, I need us to be a straight guy, you know what I mean? Like, you're just looking for the right person for the right role. You know, just do it right, I guess.
No, there was a lot of respect to that role, and, like, it was so good. Honestly, I should probably just get into it now. So, the movie came out Thanksgiving in LA, and I was, like, kind of jealous of you, might think, because I was like, oh my god, you can go watch this.
But I didn't even know what it was.
No. I read the book prior to watching it, and there are differences between the book and the movie that are kind of, they're not too big, but the ending was, like, the biggest difference. And I probably won't spoil it right now for you, but one of the most interesting things about the movie was that I liked that it was very subtle and everything. Like, I liked that there were only subtle things that if you're looking for it, you would find, like, these, like, shoulder touches, these, like, you know, like, every queer movie, you're looking for those, like, eye contact. You're looking for that, like, glance. You're looking for the eye contact. You're looking for the touch. But in this movie, I like that they're showing two guys that at first don't seem to be hung up about their sexuality. They just kind of are. And throughout the movie, the best parts of this movie are when they're just kind of existing together in love. It takes place in this northern Italian town or during the summer. Between two characters, Elio, he's like 17, and Oliver, he's like a 24-year-old grad student. And that was like another big contentious thing with everyone, saying, you know, he's 24, he's 17, we don't like the age difference, but like in Italy, the age of consent is 14, which, whoa, you know, it depends. Yeah, like my this face is like, nah, bro, like, four. Yeah, I know, 14.
I was, what the fuck? You said the other guy was 24?
Mm-hmm. Dude, I'm obviously, Armor Hammer is older than 24.
Right. I'm 24. Like, I mean, I'm 25. Like, I couldn't. I just could not. Like, if you have teen,
a 17-year-old, right?
Like, if your age includes a teen in it at all, I'm like, no thanks.
Yeah. Even 19 is like too young. Like, nah, you gotta stay away from me. Like, I need you to like be able to drink at a bar with me, but. Then again, you can always drink a lot sooner in Italy, too. And
oh, yeah. But it's not all about drinking for me. But I understand that criticism for sure.
Yeah, it was like a big turnoff for everyone. But I guess when you read the book, because in the movie, he seems a little bit more immature than the actual book. In the movie, you're actually seeing him and you see a teenager. But in the book, he's a lot more mature in the book and a lot more sensitive, because you actually get an insight to his what he's actually thinking instead of what he's doing, because there's such a difference between what both of these characters are saying the whole movie and their actions. they're always speaking in a coded language. They're always aware, and they're always, like, scared over their own, like, I don't know, femininity. They're almost scared of their actual feelings. Like, the whole movie is about people who are, like, scared of their feelings and won't even take that step. Don't even think that they can take that step just so they can be free from their macho bullshit, you know? And it's not just their macho bullshit. I feel like it's two characters that are struggling to even, like, put down those walls long enough to, like, I don't know, connect. And when they do, when they finally let down those walls, when they're by themselves, when they're private, it's like, wow, like, this movie captured exactly what it feels like to fall in love for the first time, to connect for the first time with someone with no, like, no one around you. It's just you and this other person, and it's super beautiful. And who wouldn't want to fall in love in, like, in Northern Italy with your bae, you know? Like, it was beautifully shot, and Elio is, like, spending the whole movie pretending that he hates Oliver, and I'm like, that's so queer. Like, have you ever done that, Maitha? Like, you've seen a girl, and you're like, no, I don't like her, but you actually, like, totally like her.
I don't think I've done exactly that, no. But I guess, yeah, I have been, like, you know, in a sort of butting heads type of way, and then it turns out we get along really well. Like, I've had that, but not necessarily, like, oh, I was into her and that's why I was butting heads with her. No,
yeah, Elio definitely, like, was into Oliver when he met him, so he was just trying to be, like, whatever. He's trying to be, like, blasé, and, like, he's trying to act like whatever Oliver does doesn't bother him, and I was like, that's such a teenage, angsty bullshit thing to do. But Oliver's just as bad. Like, Oliver is, like, completely avoiding being around Elio sometimes. Like, he just, like, walks away. He just, like, leaves. He just completely ignores him. He's like, I can't do this. I'm just gonna leave. And because he's also scared that, you know, he's finally around someone who feels normal, it seems. So he just kind of avoids it completely. He's like, nope, feelings, gotta go. Gonna go gamble at night instead. So, but,
What? Do you think that, that because you read the book and you had this kind of insight into what these characters were thinking, you were able to see that more? Because a lot of what you're saying, like I do see how that makes sense in the plot of the movie and stuff, but a lot of that stuff I felt like didn't come across to me because I didn't read the book. To me, it was like, it just came across a little bit differently. Like, I didn't feel like I had as much of an insight to what they were thinking.
Oh, no, that's why the book is so much better, because in the movie, I felt like there were so many things that were way too coded. Like, I was like, okay, I get it, like, but can someone put, like, a voiceover? Can, like, Elio? But that's why I like the book, because in the book, you're really getting to see what Elio feels, and he's always thinking something about Oliver, and he's always, you know, it's always very beautiful and eloquent. But in the movie, like, you realize, oh, wow, none of this was coming across. Like, how are they even, like, making this connection? Because in the book, at least you understand, because Elio has this running monologue in his head the whole time, just, like, obsessed with Oliver. Like, he's just like, oh, he looked at me today. Wow. My heart fluttered. You know, like, but in the actual, like, movie, like, you don't see his heart flutter. You just kind of see him glance at Oliver all the time, and they kind of just, like, quietly stalk each other. And I guess that was the reality, is that they're quietly stalking each other. But meanwhile, in the book, Elio is, like, having this, you know, 27-page monologue on, like, Oliver and why he makes him mad, you know? And maybe that's the beauty of the book versus the movie. And also, like, of course the book's always going to be better. I'm a nerd. Like,
duh. Well, it's just you get more information, period. Yeah. So, I mean, I still thought that the movie was beautiful. I still like that. For once, because what you see very frequently in movies like this is that it's somebody else that's getting in the way of this relationship. It's society that's getting in the way of this relationship. The only thing that's getting in the way of them is themselves.
Themselves, yes. They're just so scared to, like, feel. You know, like, the whole time, Elio is just, like, trying to be, like, a cocky bastard, and so is, like, Oliver. Like, they're just, they get in the way of themselves. Like, oh my god, there was a scene in there that, spoiler alert, I'm gonna spoil the scene. Oliver and Elio have already broken up, and Elio's speaking with his father, who's, like, amazing professor and a kind, gentle person. he has this talk with him that I feel like all queer people really need to hear, and it's actually
really
like
all people.
Yes, but I feel like queer people don't get to have this conversation with their family members. I feel like straight people, when they get their heart broken, their parents come up to them and tell them the same speech. But I feel like queer people, they don't ever get to hear that speech, you know, that like you just got your heart broken because you had like a secret affair with someone and you can't actually show that feeling. And that's very like, I feel like that's super crucial to people who are in the closet or people who aren't able to like feel. Like, you don't just have to be in the closet, you can just be like heartbroken and unable to you don't even want to open up to people and tell them that you have, like, you know, something happened to you. And Elio's dad has this conversation with him where he just kind of tells him, you know, it's okay, you're allowed to feel, and you're allowed to mourn this. And I feel like a lot of people, period, have a problem with feeling and with accepting how, you know, they're sad or they're happy. And Elio's dad was just super chill. He's like, look, I don't care if you're gay or not, I'm more upset that you're hurt. And I feel like queer people, and like they're talking about Latinos Lunch, I feel the straight people need to come out to us in support of us. And that's what Elio's dad did. He came out in support of queer people, of love, period. He didn't give a fuck who he was in love with. He was more concerned with like, wow, your heart got broken, and now like I'm more concerned that you're not able to express yourself, that you're taking this unhealthy way to avoid your feelings. And oh, it was so fucking beautiful. Like, I wept. Like, I openly wept in the movie theater at that scene. That was the one scene that broke my heart. Yeah, I did.
I held it in until I got home, but see, what I like that what you got out of it, that's good. Like, you read it in a very like in the world of being queer or whatever. Like, I read it in a more human way, like in a, because what the dad was saying, the dad's speech is one of the best parts of this movie, like, to me.
Honestly.
Because honestly, what he's saying, he's saying what nobody ever says, because whenever you get your heart broken, people always say the same thing. They say, there's somebody else that you'll find love again. They'll say, you know, time will heal, you know, these are ways you can avoid pain. They say all the generic stuff, but he said the complete opposite. He said, for one, you might not ever feel this amazing love again. Like, this might have been it. So you better sit there and feel that pain and cherish it. You know what I mean? He's like, yeah, this pain, this love, like, it's feeling is not bad. Even when there's a, you know, hurtful feelings, this is what makes you feel alive. This is what gives you life. And that was beautiful for me to hear on a personal level. So and then it was also hard because, you know, he was saying what I think a lot of people fear is that, damn, you might not ever find something this strong, this pure. So that was hurtful, but at the same time, it was real. It was like, damn, maybe, you know, you shouldn't get so upset whenever you lose somebody. Maybe you should sit there and appreciate, like, damn, I got to experience this. And so he connected with his son in that moment in such a human way, where it was just like, dude, like, I don't even think I have that with your mom. Like, that real passion, that connection on such a level, like, cherish it. And, like, I took that to heart. I was, like, I came home and I was, like, watching a commercial or something. And that's why I'm crying. God. And I was, like, I don't think this is about a commercial, but, you know.
No, it's still about that scene.
That speech is one of the most impressive things I've ever seen on TV, on film, whatever.
Yeah, and I think that scene and the very end where, and I liked how they shot the ending of it. It's different from the book. Because in the movie, it's just straight up, like, you get, like, I don't know how long, you get, like, a Sufjan Stevens? Anyways, you get, like, a song that's, like, 3 minutes long, and just Elio's, like, weeping, and you're just watching it, and you're watching his heart break, because, you know, the love of his life decided to, like, marry someone, and they both were unable to make sense of what they felt and to keep it, you know? I feel like that's, like, a beautiful and amazing scene, and I feel like any director, any actor that can portray that to, you know, this queer girl or that movie theater full of people, that, like, that real pain that doesn't go away, that it exists forever, and you just have to make peace with it. And the book is way more harsh, dude. Like, in the book, spoiler alert, Elio goes back after, like, 20 years, and, like, Oliver is, like, a professor, he has, like, a beard, he has children, and it, like, he has like lunch with him, or no, he has like tea with him, a dinner, and just tries to see, like, okay, am I imagining my feelings from 20 years ago? Like, at the end, you just feel like heartbreak because he's like married. He has like kids that are like teenagers now. And he makes a comment. He's like, yeah, my kids are as old as you were when you met me. And that like felt dirty and wrong. That I meant that, like, the book.
See, you see how it's weird?
Yeah. And they even kind of look at each other like, yeah, I know. They're like young, dude. And, but it just made me, it's more heartbreaking because Elio is in love with him still. And you can tell where Elio is like heartbroken, where he's like, you know, he has this life that I wanted with him, you know. Maybe I didn't want kids, maybe I didn't want this, but I wanted to be with him doing anything. And so, like,
that does sound worse.
Tears, like, it's just, it's so much more harsh because it's like, damn, like, in 20 years, am I gonna be pining over someone? Like, I don't want that. Like, no one wants that. And it was just, it was too real.
Well, that's why I think it's so great that they, whoever made this decision to change the ending in the actual movie, I praise you, because I think it fit a lot better. It fit in well with the dad's speech, because the dad was saying, like, it's okay to feel this, it doesn't make it less real, you know what I mean, everything that the dad said. If they had kept in the whole 20 years later thing, I think it would have not gone, you know, it would have been more of a despair type of thing, you know what I mean? Like, here at least it's like they had this great love and you can end it there instead of like 20 years later you're still gonna be suffering. Like, instead it kind of gives you hope, like, maybe in 20 years he'll be remembering this fondly.
Yeah, instead
or
of
so,
like,
so one hopes.
Yeah, I'm like, it's different from the book, but I mean, even the author decided after he saw the movie, he's like, well, I prefer his ending. Like, he's like, yeah, looking back on it, he's like, my ending was like super dramatic and sad, like incredibly sad. And he agreed, he liked this one more, so much more. And another spoiler alert, there's a scene with a peach. I'm not going to spoil that. I'm just going to say there's a scene with a peach. And and in the actual, like,
a little awkward.
I mean, whatever, you know? But, like, in the actual, like, book, spoiler alert, Oliver actually eats the peach. My dad's looking at me crazy. And if you see this movie, you understand what I'm talking about. Like, Oliver actually eats the peach, like, very comfortably. He's just like, your face.
Yeah. I'm gonna leave it at these facial expressions.
Yes, good job, leave it at the facial expressions.
But overall, what do you rate this, what do you rate this movie?
There was just like a lot of glances and silences and coded language, and I understand it's about two dudes who are unable to feel because of themselves. And in the book, you're actually getting Elio's feelings. You know, Elio seems like a different person in the, like, the book versus the movie. Like, I liked him more in the book. He was much more mature and sensitive and less of, like, he didn't have a cocky vibe to him at all. If anything, he was bisexual, you know, and there was a very good, I feel like that was, like, a healthy representation of bisexual men, if they identified as such. I don't know. I'm just kind of throwing that on them, but I felt like it was a good representation of humans, kind of just being humans and loving who they side and, you know, doing, having consent with their bodies and doing what they chose. So that's like 4.5 pan dulces, just because I felt like the book was better at describing things. What about you?
I guess the only thing that I can possibly ding it on is what we kind of talked about towards the beginning, where their feelings and the things I think they were thinking when they were still in conflict, I feel like that didn't come across very well, and then them transitioning to them actually being open about it, it wasn't, I guess, as good as it could have been, but it still was pretty, it was pretty good still, so I would just say half a cafecito on that.
Yeah, but, like, if you wouldn't have known anything just watching it, like, it wasn't obvious. Like, you're like, something's going on, but I'm not...
That's what I'm saying.
Not
yeah.
sure. Yeah. Yeah, and that's why it kind of, like, yeah.
Yeah, see, I didn't know. I hadn't read the book. I hadn't even seen a trailer. So for me, them going, so like the feelings didn't come across as much as maybe they could have. Like, the whole time I was like, Elio really doesn't like this guy. Like, I believed it.
Yeah, and I don't know. But, you know, that Sufjan Stevens song, Mystery of Love, oh my god, it gets me every single time. I cry. Like, I listen to it on a loop. Like, I listened to that song on a loop on the way home and, like, bawled and wept because it just... I'm burping. It's just because it just, it hit a nerve, and that movie, like, I needed, like, 20 hugs afterwards, and I was like, bye, my thing. I'm gonna go to Mexico now and drink a lot.
That's funny.
Yeah.
I mean, like, it definitely got to me just because of the speech, though.
That, honestly, that's the best part of the movie. I mean, their love is great, but, like, how the dad handled that was, like, the best part of the movie. Like, that stays with you.
Yeah. Well, because the love story is amazing, but that's between them two. That speech can apply to the world, really, you know what I mean? All right, so Shameless. What do you know about Shameless?
The only thing I know is the queer storyline between the guy with the red hair.
But what do you know about it? That there is one?
I know that he has a thing for the guy that works at the corner store, and then they have, like, a secret relationship, and they get together, and then he goes to the military, and Shameless is just, like, a mess, so I try not to keep up with it too much.
Okay, so you only know, like, first season only stuff is what you know.
Oh my god, that was one season?
Wow. That's only first season stuff, yeah. They're on their eighth season. It's been on since 2011, dude, and their family has gone through some shit, to put it lightly.
Damn, eight seasons?
Yeah, eight seasons. It's already been renewed for the ninth. I don't know if you know this, but it's based off of Shameless, the British original series.
UK.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And John Wells developed it for the US, and it premiered in 2011. It's about a full family. I mean, the big ass fucking family, mostly about the kids, and it's set in a low income neighborhood in Chicago. The Gallaghers, there's six children total that we know of, and Frank and Monica Gallagher are the parents. Monica doesn't show up very much, but Frank does. So Frank is in it quite a bit. He's a popular actor. He used to be back in the day, and it's, I guess to put it in a broader spectrum, it's a show about poverty. It's about trying to go up in the world and trying to move, you know, past that poverty, basically. It's about alcoholism, mainly Frank's alcoholism and how it affects the people around him or his kids. And it's different from other shows about families that struggle in that way. And I'm quoting this from, like, somewhere that I saw online. It's not blue collar. It's no collar. It's not. There's no collar.
Wow.
I mean, Frank is a great example of that, because the dude basically lives off of welfare and conning people and stuff like that.
He really does, though.
I'm gonna briefly, because there's a lot to, like I said, there's eight seasons out right now. The season finale for season eight is coming up pretty soon. So I'm gonna briefly go over the main characters, which is the kids. There's Fiona. She's played by Emily Rossum. She basically took on the caretaker role after her parents were shit and couldn't do anything. She is known for, like, how miserable and serious she is, but she's also super hot and awesome and gets shit done.
You casually threw that in.
Yeah, but she's also a cool character because she does all this stuff, and, I mean, she's still flawed. She fucks up, and she's a promiscuous girl, but you know what I mean, that you have to have that kind of a character sometimes, because you can't make all these people out to be saints in that department.
She just likes to have fun.
Right, exactly, and it's definitely hard for her to do that in her, the role that she plays with her siblings. And with her storyline, for the most part, what you'll come to find is that men are trash. So
forever trash.
Yeah. Lip is the next oldest one. He's also a hot mess, of course. He's kind of like a low-key genius. Like, he's super fucking smart. He has a knack for getting himself into trouble, and he gets his family out of trouble a lot of the times. And he also overly invests in other people. Like, honestly, he kind of spends all his time thinking about others and etc. But he's a super smart guy. That's what he's known for at the beginning. And he's also promiscuous, because, I mean, he's a guy. He's a teenager. Or he was at first. And Carl and Debbie, they're two of the younger siblings. At first, I mean, they don't have a huge storyline, because, like I said, they're kids. but they are both portrayed to be really weird kids. Debbie's like overly observant, and she's gotten more of a storyline as the years have come, especially right now. Carl was super weird as a kid, like doing all kinds of weird shit. I think he kind of maintained his weirdness, but he's also kind of.
I remember him. Yeah.
Yeah, he's a little.
He was just strange.
Uh huh. So I like that they did that though, because I mean, you can't portray these kids to be like generic people when they're growing up around chaos. The very youngest one is Liam. Liam is, I guess he's biracial. He's Monica's kid, but obviously he's not Frank's kid because the kid's he's black, and but nobody questions it. Like for several seasons, nobody's like. You know, like, obviously that's not your kid, you know what I mean? Like, nobody says, like, nobody treats him like he's a half-sibling. He's a baby of the family at first. He's just another one of them. So I kind of like that. And he really had, like, obviously he was a kid, he was a toddler, and then now he's probably, like, 6 or 7 or something like that. So he's barely starting to get his own storyline.
Wow.
He was literally a baby when the show started, and they've kept up with, like, the ages properly, so... 8 years later, he's around 8. There you go.
Wow, I really haven't seen the show.
Yeah, there's a lot to it. The main person that I'm going to talk about is Ian. That's the one that you were mentioning earlier. He's the redhead who, for a reason, well, I guess no, Debbie has red hair too. He at first, in the first season, is a gay teenager. Later, he's a man who's, like, his sexuality is addressed from the first episode. Yeah, from the get-go. Like, they don't ever try to make
it
like a...
Oh, I remember that scene. I remember that scene from the UK Shameless.
Okay. I didn't get into the UK one. I tried to. I didn't like it as much as... This is one of those rare cases where the US did it better, in my opinion.
Oddly enough, yeah. You're right.
Yeah, they did really well. He's played by Cameron Monaghan, I think that's how you say it. And you might recognize him from Gotham. He plays Baby Joker. He's really good at it. Really, really good. So I broke it down and got basically one episode from each season that I think is worth talking about, because like I said, there's over 90 episodes of this. I can't talk about everything.
Oh my god.
I'm mainly going to talk about Ian, and I'm mainly going to talk about queer storylines.
Yes,
throughout,
do it.
Throughout the 8 seasons, and it's quite a bit, so I might skip around. We'll start with the first episode. Like I said, we're going in chronological order. And the first one, some of the stuff that you probably saw, Lip starts to suspect that Ian's gay. So, well, he finds, like, his little porn stash or whatever. So he tries to kind of, like, figure it out for him, or, like, test him by getting this girl to, like, give him a BJ and all this other stuff. Because that's the kind of stuff that happens in that hood. But it turns out like you were saying, he's hooking up with, like, this older dude who works at the corner, that he works at the corner store with. Who's like a married Muslim man.
Yep.
That's just one of the things that is the same with this show and with Call Me By Your Name, is that he's very young at the time. He's probably like 16 or something like that. And the older dude is in his like 20s. Lip gets angry. He's like, not so much for him being gay, but more because he's lying to him. He hasn't told him. And for two, he's hooking up with this older dude who he thinks he's hooking up with because he's giving him stuff like shoes and stuff like that, but Ian, you know, he's not looking for a sugar daddy. That's not like what the whole deal is. Later on in the season, he ends up kind of hooking up with his main relationship throughout the show, which is with Mickey Milkovich, and he's known as like this really bad guy who does a lot of horrible shit and is a part of a terrible, terrible family. He's like your generic white trash.
All of them are pretty trash, though.
Yeah, yeah. But this is like, he's even more trash. Like, he's, you know what I mean? Like, he really steals, and he's a pimp later on in the seasons. Like, he literally, like, whores out
what?
Women. Yeah, he's literally a pimp.
Oh, my God.
He's not a good guy, but he falls in love with Ian, and vice versa. So, throughout the first season, isn't it? But throughout the first season, Mickey's very reluctant to be affectionate and stuff like that. It takes him a really long time to get past his internal homophobia. And I think that's an important process, especially when it comes to these guys who think that they're really hard. But yeah, so we'll just go ahead and fast forward, because like I said, we got to move through these. In season two, episode eight, the family's problems have grown exponentially. I won't even try to keep up with what's going on with everybody else. They're going through shit, I'll tell you that much. But one of the main things that's happening with Mickey and Ian is that Frank catches them, like, going at it, if you will. And because, like I said, Frank is he's a douchebag. Frank is their dad, once again. They're both working at the corner store at this point, and he wants to take advantage of that. He wants to take their money and the boost from the place without them saying anything, and he uses their relationship as blackmail.
Oh, Lord.
So, yeah, Mickey, being, you know, who he is as a person, is pissed off, and he's like, sorry, dude, but I gotta kill your dad. So he spends the rest of the episode looking for Frank with his guns, with his cronies, and he's gonna kill Frank, because that's what he does. He kills people that are gonna get in the way of his life. Well, for one, he has a decent reason, right? If Frank goes blabbing and Mickey's dad finds out, Mickey's dad will kill Mickey. Plain and simple.
The fuck kind of show is this? Oh my god.
It's a crazy show. It's Shameless, if you will.
Yeah.
So
pun intended.
Right. So Frank, see, here's the thing about Frank. He's a scumbag, he's a con artist, he's a terrible father. He has this ego for days. But what's crazy about him is he's actually pretty well educated. He's not racist, he's not homophobic, he's like hyper aware of society and shit like that. So he's never like anti-Ian being who he is. He's just like, yeah, there's some genders, choose one that you like, find somebody to fuck, that's it, you know what I mean? Like, he doesn't care, like, that's not, you know what I mean, he's not homophobic at all. He's like, I just want free shit from your corner store.
Oh wow.
Yeah, so
yeah, that sounds about right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like I said, Mickey tries to kill his dad, and he tells Ian that he's done. He's like, I can't do this anymore. I'm done, blah, 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 blah. But you know how that works out. In the same episode, what's worth mentioning is that Lip tries to drop out of high school, and then Fiona, who had dropped out of high school forever ago, decides to get her diploma because that's, like, their little bet. He's like, oh, I'll go back to school if you go back to school or whatever. So they bring up like the difficulty of in these kind of situations being able to get an education. They slip in little shit like that, which I think is worth mentioning. Yeah. The next season, another episode I want to highlight is episode 3 of season 3. This one's more about like sexual harassment. So Fiona tries to get a job at this grocery store, but it turns out that like the manager.
I remember that. Yeah.
You remember that? The manager tries to like get like a blowjob or whatever, and he's a fucking pervert. And then on that same episode, she's going home with Debbie, who's very young at the time, and there's some pervert on the bus like watching and like, you know, doing his business at the same time, and she gets pissed off and like goes after him and kicks him off the bus and like all that shit, and then tries to report it later to the police, but the police, they don't really, they're like, okay, well, we'll turn in the paperwork, but there's nothing we can really do, and that's bullshit. So
it is,
but the kind of people that they are, they like to take matters into their own hands. So what Fiona ends up doing, obviously she can't do anything about that pervert on the bus, but what she ends up doing is blackmailing the manager to get a job and to get a good schedule.
Shout out to her good schedule.
Yeah, she's like, I need to be 8 to 5 because I have kids, you know what I mean? Even though they're not hers. So they address that subject, and I think they do it in the proper Shameless way. So season 4 comes along. This is towards the end of season 4, episode 11. And by this point, Fiona, who has been kind of everybody's rock, is in deep shit. Like, she finally did some shit that got her in trouble. And then at this point, also Frank has almost died, but Frank is like that wild dude that has 9 lives. Like, the dude can't die.
So, that's true. He doesn't. I want him to.
Yeah. He.
Oh no! You gave me a look.
You go back and forth with that. But yeah, at this point, Mickey has been forced into like a relationship with this one of the like the Russian hookers that he has to that his family runs or whatever. Her name is Svetlana. She becomes relevant later. That's why I'm naming her. So he's forced into like a relationship with her, and they have a kid, and they're supposed to get married and all this stuff because his dad has found
they
out
have
at
a
this
kid?
Point. Yeah, because his dad found out that he was messing around with Ian and forced him to, you know. So
wow, that's
yeah,
heavy.
It is. So this episode's pretty relevant because he basically, in a way, gives Mickey an ultimatum. He's like, because he's watching him with his family, and he's like, wow, like, what we're doing here, like, having this sad excuse of a relationship is too much for me, and he's like basically wanting to end the relationship. So they're in the middle, after his son's baptism, his dad has just gotten out of prison, and they're like celebrating at the bar, and that's where Ian tells him, and then Mickey's like watching Ian like walk out the door, and he like publicly comes out to like a bunch of thugs and like a bunch of, you know, men, and he's just like, I'm gay and like I like Ian and all this other shit. If anybody has a fucking problem with it, you'll answer to me, or whatever it is that he says. And that was it. That was the end of it. Well, other than him having to like beat the shit out of his dad, but there's that.
Awesome. At least he beat him up.
Yeah. There's more to Ian. What I like about this show is there's more to Ian than just his sexuality. This dude like went to the military, got kicked out, did all this other crazy shit at this point. That's what I like about the first three episodes of season five. They address Ian's bipolar disorder, which he gets diagnosed with pretty early on. And his mom also has that bipolar disorder, so they kind of talk about it being hereditary and stuff like that. And they also kind of have this little unorthodox family going on with him, Mickey, Svetlana, and their son. So that's that whole storyline is worth watching. I think it's very interesting. I mean, they treat mental illness, maybe not, you know, it's not the best representation, but they show it within the context of what it would be like for them in this shameless family, you know what I mean? Like, that's how it would be for somebody with low income who doesn't have access to that much information, who, et cetera, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, they address a lot. They have a lot of time to address a lot. So moving forward, season six, towards the end of the season, Svetlana at this point has kind of developed a relationship and gotten out of being a hooker, and she doesn't have to do that stuff anymore. She now works at the bar, who is now owned by Kevin and V, who is the next door neighbors. They're fucking awesome. They're pretty great. They have like two kids, I believe, or two or three kids, and now Svetlana has the one kid, and basically Svetlana, she's low-key a genius too. So she helps him out at the bar a lot, and she's like in danger of being deported. So Kevin is married. He's actually married from like a previous relationship or something like that. So he can't marry her. So V steps in and like decides to marry her because they've developed that kind of a relationship at this point. So Svetlana kind of, I guess Loki comes out because she interprets the like her role in their relationship as like she needs to give them something. And without going super into detail, they end up in kind of like a throuple polyamorous type of relationship. Even though Svetlana, I think she's pretty clear about it. She's like, she only really likes V. Yeah.
She's only there for her.
Yeah. But it's an interesting relationship. It's also chaotic. There's also ups and downs. There's also crazy shit that happens that even I was like, okay, that's enough. But
I'm done with you, Shameless.
That's enough. Please stop. So that's another really interesting thing that happens in season six. Season seven, episodes like five and six, Ian kind of begins this complicated relationship. And like I said, these guys, they're not on Twitter learning about social justice and all this stuff. Like, no, they're just trying to survive out there. So when he like kind of falls for this guy who turns out to be trans, he has some issues with it, and he has to get through that. So they kind of address that in season 7, and it goes into season 8. And I love that character, Trevor. He's awesome. So if you want to see, like, a decent trans storyline, do the damn thing. But yeah, season 8 comes along, and people have been not liking the season, but I really like it. Because, you know, they've gone through a lot of shit, and they're trying to all get up in the world, including Fiona and Lip. Lip gets really serious about his sobriety, because it turns out Lip is pretty much an alcoholic. I mean, the signs are everywhere throughout the seasons, but they don't really fully acknowledge it and fully acknowledge him having to recover until season 8. So I like that whole storyline, because he meets other alcoholics and tries to help them and stuff like that. And then just some other stuff that they cover that I haven't covered in these episodes. They covered domestic abuse, bullying, slut shaming, gentrification that comes up really, like, in the recent seasons. And thanks to Frank, he kind of, like I said, Frank is a weird character, but thanks to him, they bring up how, like, being a hardworking American and keeping your head down and just working your 9-to-5, that doesn't always get you ahead in life. Like, the system is not always set up for success.
Oh, no, definitely not for poor people.
Exactly. So that comes up too. There's so much covered in this show. It's just all around worth watching. And I did get a little spoilery, but trust me, I only scratched the surface.
Like, trust. She didn't even go into, like, a tenth of it.
I started up watching again, because they introduced a new lesbian character in this latest season, who you might recognize from Gossip Girl. I like the character. I think she's awesome. Her storyline didn't go where I wanted it to, but it's still, she's there. You have some representation there. Lesbians.
Shout out
to lesbians.
Shout out. Okay, we gotta take a drink. I said shout out.
I'm really excited about 2018 TV shows.
I'm ready for 2018 movies. Like, we're both super excited Ocean's for the year to come. Ocean's 8.
Yeah, actually, some of these shows, these are some shows that I might cover, and some shows that I will definitely cover, and then some that I definitely won't. But just to look out for that have either queer or queer POC women in them. Mm-hmm. Of course, One Day at a Time, that comes out this month. And we're doing a part 2 to that. Are you ready for that?
A part 2?
Yeah, One Day at a Time, season 2. We're going to make a second episode. Oh, yeah.
No, I'm so ready. My body is ready. I'm going to binge watch it that day.
Have you seen the trailer?
Oh, yeah. I saw that girl. She was putting a scarf on. I was like, wait, hold up. Who is this? She's
putting a
so
scarf
cute.
That she's already wearing.
Yeah.
Oh, I found her. I found her Instagram, by the way. I found the girl. Yeah, it's gonna be
of
it's
course
gonna be
you
good.
Did.
Yeah, she's still super low key. Like, she has like under 1,000 followers right now.
Ooh, send it to me when we get off this thing so I can follow her too.
I know. I'm about to message her like, hey, you wanna do a Cabrón de Chingones interview?
We just wanna we want some insight.
Yeah. Other shows to look out for. 2 episodes are already out. Maybe even more by the time this episode comes out. But Grown-ish, I think that's gonna be really good.
Oh,
they have a great,
that's right.
It's good. They have a great bisexual character in that. She's not a person of color, but she's still really cool. Fresh off the boat last season, or this last year, has a new character. Well, she's not a new character, but she's newly out. And I think it's a great storyline, and I love Fresh Off the Boat, period. It's great representation for, like, Asian people in general.
In general.
The Chai by our personal favorite, Lena Waithe.
Lena Waithe.
I know you've
hero.
seen it, the pilot. I have not yet.
Oh my god, it is so good. Like, I didn't even care that I didn't see any queer people yet, because there's so many people of color, and they're getting told in such a beautiful way. Like, there's so much compassion for it. I love it.
I hope it's something like Shameless, but with actual people of color, because Shameless, that it does lack that a little bit.
That's why I don't watch Shameless, because I'm like, okay, white people struggling, that's cute.
Yeah,
I'm like, white tears, don't care, sorry, not gonna watch.
Yeah,
that's why it's really hard. I'll try.
No, I get it. Yeah, it's from the perspective of like white poverty. Yeah, which, but that's a real thing too. They beat up pedophiles and racists, if that makes you feel better.
I don't know, I feel like that's like a given. Like, I feel like people should just do that.
Other than the Chai, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, new bisexual character, and Black Lightning has two women of color in a relationship.
Yes!
So, look out for those. We're going to cover, for sure, at least two or three of those.
Yeah, and as far as movies go, I'm really excited for a movie between Rachel Weisz and Rachel McAdams. They're going to be in a movie called Obedience. They're supposed to be, like, Orthodox Jews. Rachel McAdams is supposed to... Not Rachel McAdams. Rachel Weisz is supposed to come back. And, you know, they're already doing press for it, but there's not a trailer. So I'm on Lesbian Twitter and Lesbian Tumblr trying to look for a trailer, a release date. Supposedly it's going to release in April of this year in the U.S. So we're just waiting on that. And I still want to see a lot more movies that aren't mainstream. Like, there was another one, I think it's, like, Against the Ropes, something about the queer lucha libre scene.
That one,
the one we posted.
That one's already, like, on the film festival scene.
It's on the film, yeah, but I'm trying to find a way to watch it.
Yeah, it's not, I don't think it's available yet. Yeah. We're gonna have to wait a little bit.
Whack.
But we should definitely cover that, because it fits every single one of our boxes.
Yes, like, queer people, I think there's, like, some...
No pun intended.
Yeah. And there's, like, even people from, like, the Middle East, and I think a Latina in it, and it's, like, even butch representation, so, like, wow, like, there's so much there.
Yes, I'm excited for that.
So, yeah. And those are the two I'm pretty excited for. I had a bigger list coming, but I kind of want to see, because I haven't really been hearing a lot of buzz about any of them. Of course, because they're queer. But I'm excited for them. I'm excited for this year. 2018!
Hashtag 2018. Hayley Kiyoko's coming out with a new album. I mean, it's going to be good.
Did you see that album cover?
Yes, she always goes so hard, and I'm just sitting there like, oh god, dying.
Like, damn, girl, like, could you, like, she can be gayer, and it's, yes, she will be gayer, is always the answer.
There's been so much, like, gay stuff happening just in the past couple of weeks. Like, Ariella Barrera, who plays Latina Twilight on One Day at a Time, she kind of came out, it was kind of a year ago, Twilight. But, yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty old.
It was an old tweet, but she brought it, like, it came back up, and she was just like, yeah, I mean, I said it a year ago, so she's kind of out now. I'm really fucking excited about Runaways season premiere, which is gonna be out by the time that this episode comes out, but I'm really excited.
Oh, the finale. I was like, what?
The finale.
Oh my god.
Yeah, so and then... honestly, we'll probably do Runaways pretty soon too.
Oh, we got cool. to.
Yeah.
And then Ellen Page got married. What the fuck? What?
What the fucking shit, yeah. So much has happened. Of course.
I don't know. I'm so excited. Like, everything happening this year, everything's exciting, honestly.
Really, it really is.
I'm half a bottle into this bottle of champagne.
Half a bottle into this bottle of champagne. I'm done with this wannabe 40.
This wannabe 40. The small 40. What is it, a clamato?
It's a michelada thing, but it's like, it's all right. It's all right for a pre-made can thing.
Am I the only one that thinks, like, vampiros and micheladas are, like, disgusting?
No, I think a majority of people think that. In fact, whenever I find somebody that likes micheladas, I instantly bond with them because I know their taste buds are right.
Oh, then you would bond with my entire family, except, like, I can't do it.
A lot of people can't. It's a common thing.
Yeah. But, yeah, so... it's probably gonna be it for this episode. So if you guys have any questions, comments, concerns, feel free to send us an email at cycpodcastmail@gmail.com. Feel free to tweet us at cycpodcast or DM us. We always answer them. And shout out to the cool feedback we're getting.
Yeah, and that's on Instagram or Twitter. Like, we have gotten a couple people like writing to us, and honestly, that makes us feel so good.
Honestly, yeah, it makes us feel like we're not just out here talking to ourselves.
Yeah, and of course, what we haven't gotten a whole lot of, but would be really awesome to get, would be your chosen should have been gay characters, so we can look into that and talk about it in one of our intros.
Yes.
Definitely DM or email us those.
Yes, always DM and let us know. Yes, you can follow me at Fried Papita on Twitter, and Maite.
I'm at MYTE Panda on Twitter.
lit. And make sure to rate and review us on iTunes. 5 stars. Yes. 5 stars only.
I see you guys. I see you guys adding like a rating every now and again. Not so much on the reviews, but oh my god, thank you to everyone that has taken that time. I like just seeing.
We love you guys for writing reviews. You guys are the best.
That makes us so fucking happy. And like Latinos for Lunch says, visible as fuck.
Yes.
So thank you for that.
There aren't enough queer voices talking about queer things, honestly, which is fucked up, but it's really true. There aren't a lot of us out here doing this.
Yeah, and of course, if you guys have anybody awesome in the media who we can interview, like, send us that, you know what I mean? Like, we'd love to get more people's voices on this podcast. We want to know what represents you.
Yes, por favor. And
por favor. Oh, fuck, is that like a Cumbia Kings song? Por favor. You know what I'm talking about?
I want to do the eagle noise forever, and I can't do it.
I can't do it.
There it goes, there it goes. Oh my god. But anyways, you guys, send us an eagle if you made it to the end of this podcast.
Oh my god, yes. Send us an eagle.
Send us an eagle from the Cumbia Kings.
Cumbia Kings.
Hey, doo-doo, doo-doo. Anyways, yeah.
Anything.
Yeah, we love you guys. Thanks for still listening to us.
Thanks for listening. Hit us up. I'm still in LA and I'm still bored. Just throwing that out there.
Hang out with Maite. Bribe her with michelada. She'll hang out with you forever.
Oh, absolutely. All right, guys. You guys enjoy the rest of your 2018. We'll be around. And we'll see you next week.